waiting for it? Were you waiting all week? Well, there it is! Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, we're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace.
Squarespace!
They're bringing the show to you, DLC, of course, the show all about games, and there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who is so spicy, the Spice Man is spicing up even himself this week, right? Spice Man, I'm just so nervous about the Spice Man showing back up.
Well, let me just say, so I don't know if you watch baseball, but the Astros, they've gone on to the World Series, but it was looking close there in Game 6, and it was tied up. There were two outs at the bottom of the ninth, and Jose Altuve was coming up to plate, and he was a little lost. He didn't know what to do, and so he called the Spice Man. He actually called the Spice Man from the dugout, and he said, "Spice Man, what do I do to win this game, game six,
yeah,
so we can have Cole start game one?" And the Spice Man was like, "Just let it swing, baby!" And he did. Uh-huh. And, you know, the Spice... He spiced up the whole game, spiced up October baseball.
Spiced up the World Series, really.
Yeah, really. And also, Altuve sent him the ALCS MVP trophy and is now covered in pumpkin spice. So it's a win-win-win.
Is that why you... Is it just your way of saying that the Spice Man now has a 1-800 number that you can call, anybody can call the Spice Man.
It's just 1-800 Spice Man. But you have to dial it like that.
Yeah, it's not easy. All right. Only a couple of more episodes of October for the Spice Man to make an appearance.
Spice Man's just like Christmas, baby. One spicy is the other one gets ready.
What have we wrought? All right. We got a lot to talk about. It's not just spicy time of the year. It is gaming time of the year. It's all the big stuff happening, and there's big news. Usually this is the time of year where there's big games coming out, but the news kind of settles down. No settling for the news. We got lots to talk about, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Danish Live Commentary. Because direct from Denmark, right now, we have games journalist Simon Rullegard. Simon, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, and thank you so much to Spice Man. I was really looking forward if he was going to be joining us for this show. And I got to say, like, I actually bought like a spiced latte from my local Starbucks last week just because I was like, what is all this spice about? I gotta have something in my mouth as well, you know? So,
yeah.
So there's
that. Spice Man, he gets a kickback for every one of those that he's sold.
Actually, it's just me apologizing to people. So, Simon, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that magic that I thought it would be, but at least I got to try it. So thank you so much, guys. No, sorry.
That's actually the Spice Man motto, is it's just not as magic as I thought it was going to be. All right, let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week. Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Really fun folks hanging out there in the Reddit. I encourage you to join them. Be part of the commentary, be part of the community. But Simon, you are our guest. You get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Yeah, I actually think it's pretty difficult because you also, I know, have some great stories, and I hope we can get to talk a little bit about all of them. But at least what I wrote about this week was Kotaku's investigation on Niantic and the fact that they apparently track people more than we know. I know. I mean, obviously, we all know that when we play Pokemon Go, we get tracked in some way, right? But Wizards Unite. But apparently, it's like, I think one guy was over 2,400 times a day. They like tracked his data, and Kotaku was able to like, it's because we have the thing in Europe where you can actually ask a company to give them all the information they have on you. So they got that from 10 different European players, and they could like tell specifically where they worked, where they lived, where they ate, you know, how they even like they could see that a guy suddenly went to a pharmacy and they asked him about that. So it's not that they're recording us necessarily, but it's the way they responded. First of all, it was like, wow, that's probably a mistake in the code and something. But I don't really buy that. And I think it's kind of scary that we're in a place now where they track us so much, but they at the same time, they're not honest about it. Because I think that's pretty something.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think this is a wonderful story to have your perspective on as someone in Europe, because you're right. Kotaku's article about this, really very in-depth article about it, about Niantic, especially Pokemon Go and Wizards Unite, two very, very popular games, two, I think, very exciting, cool, you know, AR games where you're going around the real world. People like the fact that you're going around the real world and you actually, you know, find things in the real world because you are tracked on your GPS. But I don't think people realize, as you said, how often these games actually check in and record your location. And because, as you said, Kotaku used a law in Europe that says that if a company tracks your data, you have the right to request that data and find out exactly what it is. I think that would be something that maybe a lot of Americans would appreciate having. And they were able to get this data from European users, as you mentioned, and find out just the depth and breadth of what is tracked. And it is startling to see just how much data is there and how much is known about us from simply playing a game. Simon, I'm curious, is this enough for you to not want to play games like this that are, you know, tracking your data, are using GPS to find out where you are in the world and then reporting that back to the publisher, to the developer?
I mean, it's not that's the problem. I think because personally, I like that the commercials I'm shown are something that I want to see, or that's something that's relevant for me right now, perhaps, because that's what they're saying they're using it for, right? So when I'm buying the spice latte at Starbucks, I don't know why. Perhaps I get a Starbucks commercial. I don't know, but like, that's okay. That's fine with me as long as they are open about it. And I think that's the whole problem. And these guys also helped build Google Maps, right? And already, like back then, there was a lot of controversy about how they recorded. And even today, I think there is how the Google cars like take photos of everything, also people's numbers and stuff like that. And so that's, you know, I've interviewed people at Google, and also a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed the guys at Stadia, the game director there. And what I think is so disturbing is that every time you ask them about how does this thing track you, they just don't answer. They just go out in a completely different direction. And that's, to me, is the problem. Because if they were just like, yeah, of course we're tracking you, like this gives you the best experience, then we could talk about, okay, I think that's weird, but is this like, oh, that must be a mistake? But no, it's listen, you guys have the best coders probably in the world. Of course this is not a mistake. And that's the problem for me.
I find myself in that same boat of being conflicted, because I appreciate the benefits that I get, the gameplay of games like this, the benefit of having, you know, traffic reported to me live, so I know how long it's going to take for me to get places with certain apps.
And at the same time, like Pokemon Go is an awesome game, and it's a way that I introduce my kid to the world of Pokemon. So that's also sad to take that away, right? But yeah, that at least that was my story. I think it's pretty important to people to know.
Yeah,
that.
I agree. And these companies are not just taking this data and using it in the game. They're recording it. They're selling it to other parties. It is a lot of information about us that is you know, they say it's anonymized and, you know, you're not, your name isn't attached to anything, but there's still a lot of that information there.
Yeah.
We're carrying around these GPS devices in our pockets all the time. It is a little worrisome about how just the depth and breadth of what is being recorded. Christian, I'm wondering how you feel about this.
I think to me, like the best or worst part about the Kotaku article was the video they shared that was part of it that, you know, just linked, kind of talking about it, but like an AR tracked future where it's this dystopic.
Oh yeah, the hyper reality thing.
Yes, which is not part of the story, but just kind of a Black Mirror look at what our hyper tracked AR future could be. And you look at something like that, and it wasn't hard for me to picture that becoming a reality in some form or fashion. So I'm kind of two worlds, where one, I agree with Simon, it's problematic, especially because we don't know. But the other side to that is we do know, we don't want to know, and companies don't make it abundantly clear, but and former attorney, no longer attorney, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not a fan of EULAs, but I also don't know necessarily a better way to present that information. And it's like, it's a lot. They have to say a lot of stuff. It's long, it's boring. Like, imagine how annoyed most customers or consumers would be if they made you, like, they put all of that information into like two sentences that you had to push A on, you know, like reading, like look up,
yeah.
Look down, like that kind of walkthrough. And if they said it really big, like the way cigarettes are, it's like, this will kill you. If it said like, this is tracking all your data, we will know if you go to the pharmacy today. That seems too much.
The new iOS update, I've noticed a few times where it'll say, hey, by the way,
yes,
Waze has checked in 14 times when you weren't using the app. Are you cool with that still? Do you want to change the settings? I think that is a version of what you're talking about, that sort of simple reminder,
yes.
Like, hey, apps are doing stuff in the background you don't know about, and I appreciate that. I don't know if it said, hey, Pokemon Go has checked in 48 times in the last 2 days. I might be like, awesome, did I get any new Pokemon? You know, I don't know if that would be actually effective in communicating, hey, your location data is being sold. You know, I don't know.
What I really like about the article, and I think it's just good to have people be aware of it, is the things that can be learned about you through randomized data, right? Or like anonymous data.
Exactly.
And I think it's important for consumers to know that and be aware of it. And then at some level, be okay with the trade-off of the good things that can come from it. Like you mentioned Waze, Jeff, or even the fun of Pokemon, but just knowing the freedoms that we are giving up. Because right now, I do think we are in a world where you can opt out of that, right? Like you don't have to exist off the grid in society to not use Waze or Pokemon Go. I think increasingly it is going to be required to kind of engage, quote unquote, with standard society that you can't really opt out of those things because everything uses it. But right now, as we're trying to figure all this stuff out, I think the more informed and aware consumers are of these things, the better. So that article is fantastic, and I'm glad we started here because I think
I really think you like you nail it there, Christian. Because what people usually say these days is that I'm not doing anything special. So I mean, of course they can record me. You know, who cares? But as you say, they can actually tell extremely much about you from what you consider being nothing, really, just wondering about, right? And that's the place we need to discuss, really.
Yeah,
I think there's even a larger conversation, not just in gaming, but in this modern world of ours. I don't think we have reckoned as a society with deep data and how much of that has changed the world. It's changed how ideas are communicated to us. It's changed how governments are run. It's changed how sports teams decide who's in their lineup. It's changed every aspect of our society. I mean, it is wild how things are marketed, how things are brought to market, what is brought to market, all of that stuff. And it's just in the last 20 to 30 years. It's a very, very recent development that we've had the ability to gather this kind of data and to process this kind of data. And I think as human beings who believe they have free will, and that they're beautiful flowers that are unique, to realize how easy it is to figure out trends and to influence how you behave based on this kind of information. Mm. We're going to need to reckon with it as a human species, and I don't think we are.
I also talked to like a researcher at the Danish University of like Technology, and he also said like what's specifically disturbing about games doing this is like you can get so much more specific data on people. Like, okay, Google, for instance, like they have the search engine and they can pretty much map you off how you search, but in games, like they can actually see how you react to stuff. They can see, you know, are you the aggressive type? Are you? They can get so much more different points of information about your personality. And so that way, games are actually perhaps even more concerning when they are tracking you like this.
Yeah, and they can market to that. They can
exactly
change your. I mean, we're getting to the point. Mobile games are at the forefront of this, but I think it's going to permeate every kind of interactive experience where as AI gets more sophisticated as well, the experience will change, will evolve, will permeate to make you keep playing it, to continue mm-hmm. to, you know, are you not having fun right now? Well, maybe the game will change because it's understanding the data that it's receiving from you in real time and understands, oh, when players behave like this, they're about to turn it off. You just got a cool drop in a role-playing game, or something interesting just happened because we want to make sure we keep that dopamine going and make sure you don't turn it off or you don't go to do something else. I mean, it's like you said, Christian, it's a little Black Mirror-y, it's a little dystopian and a little freaky, but it is certainly not outside the realm of imagination to consider the idea that this kind of data gathering, this kind of analysis of human behavior on a scale and scope that we've never seen before in human history will have effects. How granular they can get about the decisions we make moment to moment, I don't know. There's no answers to this, but it's something we are going to reckon with.
And the other side of it as well, I mentioned it on here before, there's a book I really liked. It's called Invisible Women: Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. And I think something to be aware of as we talk about data and deep mining for data and stuff like this is how the collection and study of data can still have bias to it. I think oftentimes people will look like, oh, well, the data says this, so it's just that, and that's what the data says. So it's objective, it's fair, it's not biased in any way, shape, or form. But if the collection of it had bias, or what you were studying wasn't broad enough, like you can still have reaching huge ramifications based on how the data is collected. And there's an example in the book that I'm briefly going to paraphrase of, like, I think it was engineers in Japan. And in this hiring AI algorithm, you know, one of the things that it would kind of look for an applicant is whether or not how much time they spent on some like anime website or something like that. Because when they studied all of the engineers, that was something that like the best ones all did. But because there was a gender bias in hiring for the last 50 years, they're going to have that. Whereas those websites showed scantily clad anime women. So the chance of a woman spending time on that. But then you just say, oh, well, the data says this. So two equal candidates, the person that looks at that website more shows past aptitude for, you know, it's mind boggling in how horribly wrong we can get things because of how we collect it or collate it or sort it, and then still just think, well, the data says this, right? It's easy to look at like baseball and be like, oh, well, they shift because they never hit to the left. Yeah, but also this is everyone's life. So in this Niantic article, back to video games and this person who went to the pharmacy, like while it ended up being nothing huge in that instance, it's like if it was something huge that they didn't, you know, want to be public, but then they apply for health insurance, but don't get it because of, you know, X, Y, this is their fifth cold of the year. And the data says that if you get I'm making this up, but like, if you get five colds in a year, you're more likely to get toe cancer, you know, like it's just, I don't think we can comprehend what we're doing yet. We are Jurassic Parking things right now, right? Like, yeah. we're doing and not questioning if we should do. And it's scary and incredible at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, as you both pointed out, video games are at the forefront of it, at behavior in entertainment and our eagerness to give data, especially, you know, for free. We're getting free things in order. And what we're giving up, what we're paying, is our data. And yeah, I don't know how to feel about it, to be quite honest with you, because I love these cool games and I love the fact that they're giving them to me for free. And I don't necessarily feel like I have anything to hide, but also there's a problem with this and it's affecting all aspects of our lives. All right. It's clearly a topic that we will return to many, many times down the road. But Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
So I'm going to pull a Jeff because this first one is just quick and I need to mention it and I want it so badly. And anyone at Analog, I've spent a lot of money on your website already. If you want to find a way, I still want to pay for this, but if I can get one, please let me know. The Analog announced their Game Boy, basically, the Analog Pocket, and it is beautiful. It plays Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games out of the box.
Well, tell people what Analog is, first of all.
So Analog is a company that makes retro consoles, but they do it off of FPGA cores, field programmable gate array. So basically, it's like a chip that you can program to act as kind of any other chip. So instead of emulating games, they did the like their Famicom was the first one, which I forget what it was called. And then the Mega SG is the Genesis one, which I have. And they did Super NES as well. And it's playing original games and not emulating that original hardware. It plays it as if it's original hardware, but it allows you to put it on your, you know, your big, beautiful TV via HDMI.
Emulation is basically software that allows a program written for one kind of hardware to be played on a different kind of hardware. This is not that. This is literally convincing the chip itself to behave as if it's a chip that was put in a 1985 console. You know, it is literally at the hardware level playing the ROMs as they were intended to be played. And so you can actually plug real cartridges in from the era. They work flawlessly. And this is something very desirable for people like you, Christian, who are fanatical about emulation, about playing old stuff.
Yeah, I would say not emulation, but trying to find the best way to play those old games. And then also just kind of collectors and old folk. They're not one and the same, but both people. And they also announced a dock, so you can have your Game Boy out to your big screen TV with wireless controllers. And this is like, it's kind of the Game Boy Color design, but very clean and modern looking. Better screen than what was available back then, obviously. But just, it's 100, I think $200, $199. It goes on sale at some point in 2020. This is definitely a niche product, you know, far and away. But if you are at all interested in kind of retro handheld gaming, or have a library of GBA games sitting around. Also, these things are usually jailbroken and you can run things off of SD cards. Absolutely gorgeous. This is the thing that I will spend my money on.
tell me what. So as somebody that appreciates the effort here, I kind of also feel like if you've got a whole bunch of GBA games sitting somewhere, don't you also have a GBA?
Yes. I mean, I'm sitting right next to it. I have my SP folded right behind me. I brought it to E3 2018 and was playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
There's something I fundamentally understand the Genesis or Super Nintendo. Like, they have, you know, old composite inputs. It's hard to hook them up to a modern television. You're not going to pull out your old CRT to play them. I get it. A new box that plays those old cartridges that plugs into HDMI. I inherently understand the value there. This one baffles me a little bit because I don't understand. Either you have the Game Boy or you don't. Maybe your Game Boy is broken and it's hard to get a hold of another one. Okay, maybe. But if you've got a bunch of Game Boy cartridges, don't you have the Game Boy? And wouldn't it be better to just play it on the original hardware?
No, this is a better screen. It's a better gaming experience than it is on the old hardware. It has a battery, like a rechargeable battery, arguably better battery life.
The screen is also bigger, right?
Yeah, the screen is more vibrant and better. The short answer is no one needs this, right? Like, I enjoy technology. I love retro games. The fact that this can play my Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and then with a, you know, add-on slap in the back, my Game Gear games and all my other portable games. This is like, to me personally, I can only speak for myself, this is like me buying the Horizon Zero Dawn Collector's Edition box with the statuette. Like, totally unnecessary. Looking at the statuette of Aloy every day brings me great joy. You know, like, there's yes, reasonably, no reason, Jeff, no reason.
I'm happy for you, and that I'm glad you're excited about this. I just felt like this one to me feels a little different than the things that plug into televisions, because it's like, it's a standalone thing. I get the LCD screen of this analog pocket device is a 1600 by 1440. They say 10 times that of the original Game Boy. So I get that. And it's also, you know, I remember, I'm sure everybody that had a Game Boy Color remembers, if you walked out into the sunlight, you basically can't play it. Even in indoors, sometimes you had to hold it at a certain angle to see the colors correctly. I get it. This is going to be a much, much better screen in that respect. So I'll eat my words a little bit, but
this one in particular also has an extra chip on it that is kind of open source. And so it also has full SNES button layout on it. So it will not take long, in my opinion, for this thing to also be able to play Genesis and Super Nintendo games portably anywhere you go. And I think that's a big appeal of it. And I think, like, kind of the modern homebrew community is going to tweak this and have a lot of fun with it. And I'm the person that still plays my 32X, you know, like, so yeah. I think it's for that. It's for hobbyists and retro enthusiasts. And then the other side of that coin is people with disposable income, right? Like, I cannot recommend this product to people, but it is the thing that I am most excited for in 2020.
It's not how they send you one, Christian, but you don't want to have the pull quote of "I cannot recommend this." That's not how you get one sent.
But can't you? I mean, I was like seriously thinking about getting one for my kid, because $200, that's way less than an iPad, for example. Yeah. And I have a bunch of old Game Boy games laying at my parents' house, and I can't really find my Game Boy, and I don't really know if he's interested in that, like, old tech. And, you know, right now he's totally digging the Switch and Link's Awakening and like Mario Maker. So, and I'm like, I'm not giving him the Switch to school or his iPad to school, because that's way too expensive for a 6-year-old. You know, he's going to throw it somewhere or just lay it around. But I mean, this is somewhat affordable compared to that. And I have a bunch of old games that I personally loved. And it's portable again. You know, I really think it's a very nice thing, and I think we need more, like, you know, I know that all the other portables died out because no one played them, but I think the Switch shows that people still need a portable, playable device.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent point about the $200 price point in comparison to an iPad, which people buy iPads for their kids. That's very true.
Exactly. Yeah, you just talked about it last week, right? Like, how old is your kid? Like 2 or 3 or something? Like that. So, and I mean, you know, kids just throw around with those things. And I bought one for mine as well, but it's also freaking expensive. So this is, I think, is much more affordable.
There you go, Christian. Now you can justify it.
Well, no, now they're going to fence Simon one, and I'm not. I'm still having I want to buy one, Analog. I want to buy one. I want to give you money. The story, though, I think the biggest story
is... Are you not
able to buy them yet? Oh. Okay. To me, aside from Niantic and then... There's another one where they just keep being ostriches and just really messing things up. But I think the biggest story of, like, kind of future of gaming potentially for the next decade is what Riot Games showed at their 10th anniversary celebration stream, where they put the S in Riot Games and announced a Counter-Strike meets Overwatch kind of mashup first-person shooter, the fighting game that has been much rumored after they acquired the studio from the Evo co-founder, a card game because you got to have one of those, a Diablo-style game because, you know, why, if you're going to go after Blizzard, you may as well go all the way. A animated show, I think, as well, because what, let's go after Magic the Gathering and also, and then they announced all of it, all with Project Code. Oh, and an esports management sim where you're playing as people that actually play League of Legends. And the little snippets they showed of all of these things looked phenomenal, like already pretty dang polished. But then they gave them all project letter names. And then they said, we're going dark. You know, we'll see you again later. But just in terms of a live stream of a coming out party, I think it was done so well and seemed to be hitting on all the major genres that are game right now, aside from maybe Battle Royale. But it really felt like, you know, they're out Blizzarding Blizzard. For the longest time, it was, oh, Blizzard does this because they did, someone else did that. Now they're perfecting it. And this seems like Riot Games trying to further perfect what Blizzard has perfected. I think this could be huge. I mean, look at League of Legends. Just absolutely huge for what the biggest games in the world are whenever these come out.
Yeah, I don't think I have quite as positive a reaction to all of this. I certainly am impressed. Certainly impressed that they decided to announce this in the way they did. They could have parsed all of this out and made each of these games their own special announcement. They've clearly been working on this for a long, long time and using the amount of the immense amount of capital that they've had from League of Legends. Yeah. You know, for a long time, we've heard about them staffing up and working on things. And we heard that Riot was going to be a major publisher of games. And we hadn't heard, you know, hide nor hair of any of them. Now, all of them in one moment for their 10th anniversary. That's cool. That's a kind of a neat play, a fun moment. It feels special. It feels big. It feels impactful. But also, I came away from this just feeling like all of these just seem so generic to me. Because they are all hitting on exactly all of the genres that are of the moment and not using what I think is a real opportunity for Riot Games, because they were sitting on a fat stack of cash and able to reinvest, they could have done something more daring, more interesting, more innovative. They
I'm very much putting you on the spot, so I apologize. And Simon, the same question will come to you second, so you can think about it. Well, what would that be? Like
I think the esports sim is the most interesting thing that they talked about. Like, that to me is interesting. Like, yes, we have those kinds of games, those management sims that are published, but I've never heard of one in the esports arena. That sounds really interesting, and it leverages what they're known for in a really fun way. Like, I'll give them some credit for that. It's hard for me to talk about what I would want from them without referencing something I'm not supposed to talk about. But we'll talk later about the fact that Simon and I are both playing Death Stranding right now.
But these games might be that. Don't get me wrong.
They're not going to be that.
But they might surprise in a way.
No, they're definitely not going to surprise anything. I think Jeff is right here. I mean, I think what this shows is that it's actually pretty difficult to make new games if you have already been great at making a specific kind of game, right? That's why we always see, like, game developers tend to make the same games over and over again with different feelings to it or stories. I mean, it was impressive, like, the scope they're putting out here, but at the same time, I'm on Jeff, like, it was pretty generic, and it seemed more interested in getting money off of their League of Legends property, to me at least, than to actually put something new out there.
Or, like, more interested in just covering all the bases, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, there's a list and we have to check all the boxes rather than actually doing something new. And
exactly.
Again, we're not able to talk about Death Stranding at all, but it's new.
Yeah.
It's new. It is proof that there are untapped ideas in the world of games.
I'm surprised.
It's a possibility. You have the money, you have the talent, you have the time, you have the all the luxuries that are needed to actually innovate and actually do something interesting. Yes, this is probably going to make a ton of money. Yes, all of these are the genres that are free to play, and this is clearly a free to play company. Yes, these are proven things. These are things that players tend to want, but they're a dime a dozen. Almost all of them are a dime a dozen. There's infinite options in all of these genres, and maybe they'll be special. Maybe they'll be particularly excellent, right? Overwatch, I think, is particularly excellent, and it also came out in a crowded field. Not free to play, true, but you know what I'm saying.
I'm honestly surprised. I'm honestly shocked that like this is your reaction to this, because I'm not playing Death Stranding, so I can talk about whatever I'm going to talk about. Like when that game was announced, it was like, what is this? Oh, it's a third person. Oh, Kojima making a third person stealth action game. Oh, it's Kojima walking sim, because you only see what you see. So like, are they making a first person shooter? Yes. Are they making a fighting game? Yes. But to sit here and say like Marvel versus Capcom Infinite is the same game as Mortal Kombat 11, is the same game as Street Fighter 4, is the same game as Dragon Ball FighterZ with a capital Z at the end of Fighter. Like, totally different. And if they're able to make a fighting game that is able to have a competitive scene the way that League of Legends does, or introduce a free-to-play fighting game that monetizes in a way like League does and has
I can name you six fighting games that have a competitive scene like League of Legends does, right? EVO, all the games at EVO, Smash Brothers, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Tekken, like,
are all $60 box products that pale in comparison to 1/10 of the audience of a League of Legends tournament.
Okay, so you're saying scale and market and price point are where they would innovate. That's cool.
I'm saying that
the opportunity. Riot had the opportunity because they could do anything. They had all the money in the world. They had no pressure on them to put this all out. And I think the fact that they announced all these at the same time makes me feel like none of them are special. None of them are special. They're just like, yeah, look, we got one of all the ones you want. Do you want chocolate and vanilla and strawberry? Yeah, we got all of those.
That's like saying Titanfall 2 wasn't special because it was just another first-person shooter, or Control's not special because it's a third-person shooter. I don't know. Like, until we see more of these games and get to play them, and I'm happy to be wrong and have them be very trite, derivative games.
But if Respawn was like, hey, we're about to announce our new game. It's Titanfall 2, and we have Titanfall 2, the card game, and Titanfall 2, the fighting game, and Titanfall 2. You'd be like, oh, okay. So they're all
in a universe I love.
The messaging is, yeah, we've got that. Not, hey, these are going to be really special.
I
want to be wrong. I want to be wrong, but that's how I read this announcement, which is what we're talking about.
I watched it and it's obviously well produced, but I feel like the developers talking about the passion they're bringing to these projects, it doesn't feel samey to me. And I also feel like you're being unfair to them with like your fandom of, or prior fandom perhaps, of Blizzard, where like Heroes of the Storm was a totally we got that. Overwatch was a totally we got that. Them trying to do StarCraft Ghost was we can do that. But those were properties and IPs that you were fans of, so you got very excited when you saw those things. And I think until these games come out, I'm just surprised you're taking a pessimistic view for something we know so little about. I feel Man's supposed to do.
If you took a time machine back, and maybe somebody will dig up the episode and prove me wrong. I don't think they will. If you take a time machine back to BlizzCon, whatever it was, when they announced Overwatch, I think you'll find me saying I was very disappointed by that, because what they had talked about doing was this thing called Project Titan, which was going to be this genre-shattering, crazy game. You get housing and all the stuff we heard about Project Titan was that it was going to be just bonkers. It was going to be this new MMO-type experience that is just going to – and from the ashes of that rose Overwatch. That team destroyed that project. They took a lot of the art and assets and built Overwatch instead. And I was super disappointed by that. I wasn't excited about Overwatch. I think Overwatch is a great game. And maybe Riot makes a bunch of great games here, and maybe they'll all be excellent games. I don't think any of them is going to be something that pushes the industry forward. And I think they could have. I think League of Legends pushed the industry forward. I think they could have done something really special and tried to create something new and different. And maybe one of these games will be that. Maybe I'll be wrong, but it just doesn't feel like that's the approach that they took. That's the strategy that they're presenting. What they're presenting is like, we got one of all of those. Don't worry about it.
I disagree. I'm excited, but Simon, it seems like you kind of are more aligned with Jeff here.
No, I think it's funny because like in some ways you can compare this to like when Marvel go out and say, "Wow, this is Phase 4. This is the 10 next movies we're going to make over the next decade," right? And everyone like loses their minds. Wow, they got a superhero movie with a girl. Wow, they got a superhero movie with a team. They got a superhero, you know. And we all dig that, but like here you have like, and I kind of get the same feeling that Jeff has. Like, if any of these games were really special, why did they have to compile them all in this one showing? But like at the same time, I mean, League of Legends show that they're capable of excelling in a field that is already dense with like the same games, right? So I mean, hopefully for them, they will all succeed. But I just, you know, when you look at other game developers, again, they tend not to make so many different things. So that's why I'm not pessimistic, but I'm very doubtful that they can pull it all off. That's all.
Well, again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that these games are all really, really special, and that this was just a fun way for them to, you know, drop the mic by showing all these projects at once. But I think
it was a 10-year blowout, because then they said we're going dark on all of them again. I really think it was like, this is for our fans, this is for our communities, we're Riot Games, 10 years, here we go.
Well, several of them are slated for 2020, so they're not going to go dark that. I mean, most of these are 2020 games.
No, I was surprised by that as well. That's pretty early if they say like we're going dark. Then okay, you're going dark. What, 3 months, and then you're back on, or what?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's holiday 2020, so maybe 6 months of dark. But
maybe they meant we're going dark because they're in California and fire season. So maybe the powers can get cut off.
Go dark. all right, man. I don't. We just talked about Blizzard, so let's just dive in. The story that won't die is this. Blizzard PR mess and the banning of Blitzchung, the Hearthstone Grandmaster, which we talked about last week and got into it pretty heavily, but it is not going away. In fact, Blizzard continues to ban people for bringing up Hong Kong on streams. And now I think the most shocking to me thing that, to come out of this is that it has become such a story that politicians in the United States have felt that they needed to weigh in, and a bipartisan letter, nothing happens bipartisan in the United States these days, but it was a bipartisan letter co-signed by Ron Wyden, Democrat, and Mark Rubio, Republican, as well as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Mike Gallagher and others, basically condemning Blizzard for their stance on this, for the ban and subsequent statement. Some of the actual verbiage in this letter from U.S. politicians, real senators from the United States, said, "We want to express our deep concern about Activision Blizzard's decision to make a player forfeit prize money and ban them from participating in tournaments." That's them weighing in directly on esports, which is just crazy to me. They say, "Because your company is such a pillar of the gaming industry, your disappointing decision could have a chilling effect on gamers who seek to use their platform to promote human rights and basic freedoms." Wow. As China amplifies its campaign of intimidation, you and your company must decide whether to look beyond the bottom line and promote American values like freedom of speech and thought, or to give into Beijing's demands in order to preserve market access. I mean, that's it right there in black and white. That's the thing that we all feel like they've been doing. And the U.S. Senate seems to agree. Simon, as someone looking at us from, you know, over there in Europe, what do you think about all this?
I'm so glad that I came on for this episode. And when I saw this story went on for this week, because I actually disagreed pretty much with Christian last week, even though I know that. Yeah, and this is weird because let me put this out. First of all, I'm not into the whole thing going on in Hong Kong, so it's not like I'm on China's side. But at the same time, I can't help but feel that it was the wrong place for Blitzchung to say these things. Why? Because like typically in sports, and I mean, we see it all the time in European soccer, especially, like they're very strict on the thing that we don't show political or religious things during the sports events. Because, you know, sports is a place where we can meet and lay all those politics and religion conflicts aside and then play sports. That's kind of the essence. And we just recently had the UEFA, who controls like the European Championship qualification stuff right now, is considering how to find the Turkish national soccer team because they did a military salute after a couple of games they played last week. And if you know, like Turkey has just like invaded Syria or went into Syria with like full military force. And I mean, we can all agree like, wow, that, and this is probably special because many Europeans will say, wow, Turkey shouldn't have gone into Syria. So therefore we should hit them hard if they try to in any way make that a great thing when we play soccer. But then you have to make the same thing when the opposite happened. I mean, Blitzchung, if he's such a big player, he could have said this in so many ways that wouldn't have been in the sports event itself. And I mean, it's horrible. And I think what's the problem here is really the way Blizzard handled the stuff, because it took so long for them to respond. You know, if they had gone out right from the gates saying, we got to ban you because we have these rules, I don't think the whole thing would have blown up the way it did. But because they took so long time responding, you can't help but think that China is some way involved. No, and I also think that, you know, you see a lot of American politicians taking, you know, it is almost 2020. It is almost a new election year. You know, Trump got on Twitch a couple of weeks ago. I think this also speaks to the fact that these players are also a segment that they don't usually reach. So by doing this, they'll probably get a lot of attention from players as well. But yeah, that's my opinion. And it's not that I say that Blitzchung is wrong. And obviously, Blizzard didn't handle this very well, I think we can say. And I'm surprised that they keep messing up like this. But I think actually that that it's the right thing to separate politics and games.
Well, I can agree with you that Blizzard handled it poorly. I strongly disagree that there is a way to separate politics and games, and moreover, that even should be an ideal, because everything is inherently political. I'm sorry to say that. I know I
you're true. You're right.
It's not, I get plenty of emails from people saying, "Get politics out of your gaming podcast. I go to games to escape, and I don't want to hear about politics." Fine, you can feel that way, but banning a player who speaks out is a political act. It is making a statement. You are silencing a very specific sentiment. And what Blizzard should do, I believe, could have done and should do, in my opinion, is look at the substance of what was said and say, does that sentiment jibe with our values, our company, our stated company values? American values. We are an American company. Does this sentiment stand for what we stand for? Is it something that we can feel good about? And if the person saying something does not, then by all means, ban them, punish them. But if it does, if they are actually supporting the kinds of causes and the kinds of things that you as a company claim to support as well, then you allow that to happen. You could talk to the player privately and say, hey, we don't want to stir up this kind of thing, whatever you want to do. But you don't make an example of them and punish them, because there is no way to be impartial. If the goal is to be impartial and somehow stay out of politics, then that is a fool's errand, and they failed spectacularly, because the act of banning the player is a political statement. You are not shutting down commentary by shutting down the player. You are sparking commentary, as we've seen, and it is.
Yeah, of course, Anna, but I think the problem here is really that we are in a place in like gaming history where it is Blizzard that's in charge of the sports event, right? Like in so many other sports events, it's like big unions of all kinds of things, and there's like a larger committee or something that stands for making all the rules and doing all that. But you're totally right, because Blizzard is still an American company and not some esports union, then of course they have some sort of obligation and responsibility. But I think that's really like the problem, that on one hand we have a kind of sport and a new kind of sport that's developed very rapidly like the last couple of years, right? And at the same time, they are all handled by private, commercial companies, and they have conflicts that are perhaps not beneficial for the esports as a whole, compared to if it was more like objective. And again, you know, I'm not arguing that BlizzChung is wrong or that Blizzard didn't handle it right. I just think it's an interesting discussion, talking about sports and how you like message politics or religion for that
matter. Well, I think you've hit on exactly what this event exposed, which is their conflict of interest. And what this letter from the US senators is explicitly pointing out and accusing them of is valuing their access to that market over supporting supporting democracy. And I happen to agree. That's exactly what seems to be transparently taking place. Now, Blizzard has specifically said that's not what happened. I don't buy it. I believe that is exactly what happened, and it's bolstered by the view of these politicians. And, you know, believe what you will about US politicians right now. It's not, they don't exactly garner a lot of confidence, but I happen to agree with this letter. It really seems to be transparently about the bottom line, and not even what you say or about, you know, upholding the rules or trying to stay impartial or trying to stay, you know, absent the political discourse. I don't think that's even what they were attempting to do. I think they were attempting to not ruffle the feathers of the hand that feeds them, to mix my metaphors. But you know, and that's what's so discouraging. Christian, we've talked over you, so what? Please weigh in here.
I mean, I think my thoughts at this point are, well, I agree with Simon broadly that yes, League has control to dictate, you know, what gets said within their spaces. Kind of like if I showed up to work and I cussed out my boss. Like my work can say, bye, you can't do that here. Mm. And so I understand that. But also the other side of that is the people then get to react back at that company for what they did. So is Blizzard legally in the right doing what they did to BlizzChung? It seems like 100%, 1,000,000%, yes. You know, morally or objectively, is it the right policy? You can kind of debate around the gray areas there all you want. But the idea of maybe keeping sport out or religion or politics out of entertainment or out like sport, stuff like that, I think it's difficult to do and has always been included. The difference is whether or not it's something that we agree with or something we don't agree with. Whereas, you know, sport starts here in America with the national anthem being played beforehand, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, players, you know, taking a knee and what that means. And I think the leagues then have can point to their policies and say, you're not allowed to do that, or you have to be out on the field during the national anthem. And then the consumers, if you want to call us all that, get to react appropriately. And I think see how much that matters to them. And it seems as if, and it's a side that I am agreeing with at the moment, that Blizzard is reaping what they sowed in this instance, where they reacted in a way that they were allowed to do under their employment contract, for lack of a better term, with a player in their league. And people are saying, that sucks. You suck. This is an awful thing. And we're going to tell you how we feel about it. And now Blizzard has continually, in my opinion, made PR mistake after PR mistake after PR mistake and how they handle it and address it. And they have to be willing to weather that, to wade in something like this.
They seem to be willing to weather.
Especially after banning like the American university students, right? Because that was like, okay, this is just stupid. This is just stupid, like banning them as well. Because, you know, that this has, you know, you can talk about, okay, maybe Butch Chung in an interview that was, you know, made by them and all that. So, you know, you can take my argument, right? But banning those students were just like, why? This is just like you, like, blindly running around trying to figure out how to make this mess better.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's a story that's going away.
No,
I don't know. BlizzCon came and went pretty uneventful. Diablo 4 was announced. We were excited about it, and that's all there was.
We shall see. We are going way long on the news, but it has been fascinating discussion. No, please do not.
I mean,
apologize.
The good news is, while I am not playing Death Stranding, a lot of us are playing games that are embargoed still.
Yeah, that's true. And I blame Christian, who used two stories.
Thank you. Don't blame Christian, baby. That was his
spice. Oh, the spice man. I knew it. But I do need to thank our sponsor. Talk about the hand that feeds. My goodness. I have to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. They've been the hand that feeds me for a decade. And I'm so grateful to them for that. The reason is that I'm genuinely thrilled to endorse Squarespace. It's something I have used for a long, long time. JeffCanada.com. Built, housed on Squarespace, updated on Squarespace all the time. It is my favorite, the only way I make a website. It's the only way I tell my family and friends to make a website. It's the way to make a website. You don't have to pay someone. You don't have to hire a designer for lots of dollars. You can use Squarespace and make it yourself. Make it beautiful. Make it yourself, because the tools are so simple. Let's face it, everybody's going to need a website at some point. You got all kinds of things that you might need, whether it is blogging or publishing content, showcasing your work in some way, turning a cool new idea into a new website, selling things, products or services of all kinds, even just promoting your physical business. You need a website. You can build one yourself with the tools on Squarespace so simply, so easily. And there's never anything to upgrade or patch ever. It's all handled for you. You've got free and secure hosting. You've got built-in search engine optimization and analytics to help you grow your business in real time. You can customize things with just a click of a mouse button. It's so simple. Also, you get to build it for free. You don't even have to enter a credit card to start using the tools. Just build your website. Make sure you like it before you pay them a dime. And guess what? When you do pay them a dime, we're going to help you pay less than a dime. 10% we give you off. If you go over to squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me, get yourself that free trial, build your website. Then when you're ready to launch, use the offer code Jeff Sent Me, JeffSentme. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. And let Squarespace know it's a good idea to keep supporting DLC. We appreciate it. Squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me. And then that promo code Jeff sent me at checkout. Make it yourself. Make it beautiful. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All All right. Juicy, juicy games to talk about. Yes, many of them are embargoed. But Simon, what is on your playlist this week?
Yeah, so I believe I've been playing Death Stranding, as you say, or I can say that I have it. I think that's what the embargo read, right? Yes. And I'm not going to talk about the game specifically because then I'll probably get assassinated by Solid Snake or something. But what I will say and what I think is actually interesting and what made me think is the whole press about Death Stranding leading up to this, like, it has been very vague and very ambiguous, and people have been trying to find out what the game is really about, right? And usually when I set my eyes on a new game that I'm probably going to play, I devour everything about it. Like, I read everything. I watch everything, like, you know, everything I can get my hands on. And I couldn't with Death Stranding. So I know, Jeff, you in the movie, in the world of movies, you're an unsolid, right? You don't watch trailers for anything before you go
That's
in.
That's right, yeah.
And normally I... you know, I'm not that, as I probably just told. But that's usually because, like, I love the technical ways to build stories so much that if I know everything that happens before I go in, I can kind of notice all the details that makes that. And because I couldn't in Death Stranding, I think I will try this with more games, actually. Like, you know, try to be sure and, like, okay, if PlayStation made this game an exclusive, it's probably good. I shouldn't read so much about it and just go in blind and have that totally fresh experience. And that was really special, actually. And I would just recommend that, actually, to people to try that at least once.
So you're a convert. You're going to go Unsullied now.
Yeah, I think I am. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a big thing, actually.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And you're right. It's a magical thing, and games, I don't do it quite as much, but, you know, I think there are certain games where that is rewarded, where there are surprises to be revealed. There are,
yeah,
the way the game unfolds itself.
Exactly.
I'm saying generally, not this one specifically, but I'm saying there are some games that are like that actually can be, you know, there are other games where it doesn't really matter because it's more about the mechanic, you know,
of course.
There are plenty of games where I would happily watch a stream and then could still get a joy out of it because the doing is where you get the joy, not the surprise.
No, but perhaps like these extreme narrative driven games, like and all of a sudden, like a small moment that you have perhaps watched, if you hadn't like watched it over and over again in different trailers, that moment that could seem like nothing suddenly becomes something when it's the first time you're experiencing. And that was kind of nice. But what I really have been playing is, like, I wrote a large piece on female representation in video games for this Saturday. So I've obviously played a lot of female-driven games, and I just want to talk briefly about, like, specifically like a small Danish one, because I think, like, now I should, like, talk about them, right? And I actually played this for the first time. It's called Forgotten Anne, and that's forgotten with an O in the end, and don't ask me why. But
Danish.
No, it isn't. I actually talked to the developer at some point, and I don't know really why. But anyway, it's and I also thought that you guys would actually dig this game really much, because it's a side-scrolling puzzle adventure kind of thing. It's very narrative-driven, and what's especially cool about it is that it's everything is hand-drawn animation. Like, think Cuphead, but just replaced with anime, like with Japanese art style. So it's very gorgeous looking. Like, the backgrounds are all like watercolor, just like a Miyazaki movie or something like that. It's very beautiful. And it's this very small, very weird story of this girl, Anne, who lives in the world of the Forgotlings, which is basically another realm where everything the human world forgets end up there. So, like, imagine your socks that's gone in the laundry, they live here and have a life and a work and stuff like that. And there are only two people in this world, and that's Anne, who you play as, and then her surrogate father, Master Bunku. And Master Bunku has tried his whole life to build a bridge back to the human world, and then something happens, and Anne tries to figure out what is actually going on with that whole bridge project. So basically, it's just like, yeah, a puzzle game. You run around in this weird and funny and very warm world, talking to things that have been forgotten and trying to find out how you got, you know, who forgot you, like, why don't you have a family and stuff like that. And it's very beautiful and it's very small and it's in very deep as well. So, and you know, you can always talk about whether it sticks the landing, but I think, like, because of the low price point and all that, I think it's out on all platforms. It's a very nice little thing to play. So,
yeah, I'm looking at a video of it now. You're right. It is a very, very pretty game. Yeah, you have the anime look to it. Very, very pretty. It's a game I had not heard of, Forgotten.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it works well. I mean, if you know that that's how it's spelled, I put Forgotten, and it was the first thing that came up in Google. So,
yeah, and I don't think it's that expensive. So, you know, I'll definitely, if people are into, like, side-scrolling things and a light, warm-hearted story, this is definitely it.
I've told this story many, many times, but I'll say it one more time. I remember when I was younger and bought the 3DO console. It came with a compact disc that had an episode of Batman the Animated Series on it. And I remember putting that disc in my 3DO and watching an episode of Batman the Animated Series and saying to myself, my young self, full of dreams and ideals, saying to myself, someday video games are going to look like Batman the Animated Series. I'll be like, video game looks that good. And here we are, however many years later, where I can, looking at a game like Forgotten Anne that looks exactly like you play a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Very cool. So, yeah. What else are
you playing? I've been playing Control. Again, it's a female driven, but just because, you know, I'm surprised that that game can keep giving me, like, what the F moments. Yeah. You know, I'm so surprised because at first I was actually quite annoyed with this game. I thought it took too long to give me superpowers, and I don't know why, but now, you know, I play through it and for some reason I just keep coming back and I keep finding new weird places and boss fights all of the sudden. I think that game is so it's so good at having other content than the main story, but not just like collecting stuff. Like, there's always like that, there's real encounters with like real enemies that you can see have taken serious time to develop. So that's so funny. I'm a superhero now, so that's also,
well, my promise to Christian is that I will play this game before the end of the year.
You definitely should.
It came out during my eye problems.
Oh, so yeah, that's right.
I've not played a single second of it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it based on everyone's massive positive feelings about it.
But I mean, of course, there's also a lot of like Remedy stuff. Like, I love Remedy games, but sometimes their storytelling is a bit clunky, and there's also that in this game. But I really think they nailed the controls on this one. And then the controlling of the game, like the gameplay is perfect, I think, especially compared to the other titles. And then I want to talk to about, because I'm not playing it, I haven't played it this week, but I have in my dreams at least, the Last of Us Part 2 demo that you got to play as well, Jeff. And I want to talk about it because you weren't very you weren't negative, but you were not as positive as I were, and you know, I think that I've been trying to think about what that game, at least from what you and I saw and tried, did so right. And I think what they've nailed this time, it seems, is that they've actually, you know, the feeling they want me to get, I get that from the gameplay now and not from everything else. I think in the first game, what was so special about it was how it made you feel, right? That was kind of the thing with The Last of Us. And that was very often made through dialogue, through music, through the setting. But if you cut all that away, the combat, especially like the gunplay, wasn't really that exciting. And I mean, I played through that game, I think, 6 times now. But it's not exciting anymore. I mean, I don't get the same thrills anymore because now I know, you know, I can go through the whole game with just a brick because... so there's no tension in the combat itself, and I think what they really nailed this time is because the new combat system is so dynamic, I really felt like the tension were in the combat situation and not the setting of it, and I think that's quite something. I don't know if you can agree on that.
No, I certainly agree on that. I think that just me personally, that's not what I go to games for. I'm discovering that more as I get older. And I don't know, I'm not confident that that's a positive thing about my character, about my personality, that I like more. I enjoy the feeling of being powerful and in control and able to explore without feeling that tension. That is something that I much more appreciate. I love a game like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where I have this big, beautiful world waiting for me and I can be the most powerful thing in it and get more powerful as the game progresses rather than feeling always scared. And I was thinking about that a lot this week, actually. I like games where I have lots of options about cool stuff to do, not as much games where I'm just trying to mitigate the bad stuff as much as possible.
No, I really think what's funny about what you're saying here is, like, I talked to like a Danish professor who looks at female representation or just representation of society in general. And what I think is so funny about the way you look at stuff is typically, like, games have been like people have seen games like as a software. It's something that has to do something for you. And, you know, you see it all the time. That's why people demanded like stuff like WoW Classic. Like, you have to make stuff for me because it's the software, and that's what software do. But I think what Naughty Dog is really trying to do is like look at their games like an art almost. Like, you would never tell Quentin Tarantino, like, make me this game. You just, you know, make me this film. Like, he makes a film and then you take it in. And sometimes it's horrible and sometimes it's funny and sometimes it has all these things. And I think you're very right that this wasn't pleasant to play at all. It was very tense. But that, I think that has a very special quality, especially in the realm of games, actually.
I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I definitely know people that feel that way about movies. In fact, I remember dating someone whose parents felt that way, and I just used to look down on them so snobbishly. I was such a snob about it in my, you know, in my early 20s, thinking, oh God, you only want to go to movies that make you feel good? How narrow-minded that must be for you. And now as I'm getting older, going, man, life is hard.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. Like, and the world, that you suddenly realize what the world really is. And then, you know, maybe I can just play something funny over here and it'll all go away.
Right. But that's, you know, that's interesting. And I do think that the first Last of Us certainly is a piece of art. And it certainly seems to be the case with the second one, that is at least the goal. We yet to find out how well,
of course,
it achieves it. But I'm, you know, very confident that team will pull it off again.
And then I want to ask you, Jeff, do you think we played it on a PS5? Because that was my, you know, I worried so much about that because you weren't able to see, because you said it as well, like last time, the load times were like instantly you were back in the game, right? And, and I was like, wow, this is quick. And when you see, it seems like they're almost like ray tracing stuff in here as well. And I was like, what is going on here? Is this?
I would be very surprised if they peopled that event with, you know, that kind of hardware. And maybe it was on PCs. Maybe they were on powerful PCs, but I would be very surprised.
It was so good that I almost thought this can't be on a PS4.
It was. It was shocking, the load times from a save. And I was – that is something that I am ready to be just normal. I'm ready to completely
exactly.
Forget the feeling of waiting for a load time.
Yeah.
Like, let that be something that I just can't remember anymore, the way I can't remember, you know, dialing up a modem or whatever.
No,
like,
exactly.
Let those things just seem so old fashioned. I'm ready for that to just go away. But yeah. All right. Wow. That's awesome. Very, very cool games. And where can people find the article you mentioned about women in games, female representation in games? Is it, that's written in Danish?
It's written in Danish. Yeah. So, hey, learn Danish and then you can read this awesome article. No, listen, I've actually thought about, because some guys have asked me if I put it up. So if I put it up in English sometimes, I will let you guys know. You can perhaps link to it somewhere. But right now, it's only in Danish.
Christian Spicer, I know you have been playing some embargoed things that we still can't talk about either. It's that time of year.
Yeah, well, I can say this. on IGN.com, it says that the embargo for The Outer Worlds at 6 a.m. October 22nd. Our show comes out at a weird time.
Yeah, our show comes out at an unfortunate time for that particular embargo.
But and, next week's show will be, you know, next week to respect right. embargoes yes. in all ways possible.
Well, and we're very excited. I mean, Outer Worlds was our game of E3
yes.
and, as a show. So we are very highly anticipating that game.
I will have a quick and, hit tweet when I'm allowed to, and then an in-depth conversation on next week's show. You and I talked a little bit about like, do we wait until Tuesday to do this? But
yeah,
then we're always stuck in that. There's never a good day. Every day.
No, and listen, I really think like I really want to kind of salute you guys for actually, you know, sticking to the Sunday, because I know that oftentimes you say, wow, like last Monday, all the news came out and we weren't able to talk about it. But at the same time, I mean, we have news today are so fast and so quick. And I personally love a lot more like when the news like had a week to settle and perhaps someone weighed in on it and discussion has become a different one than just the news in and of itself. And I think that's actually a quality.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very, very much. Christian, what have you been playing?
Yeah, so I will start with Gears 5 via Project X Cloud, which I got invited to their beta. And right now there's only a select handful of games that you can play through the beta. I'm playing on a Pixel Android work phone. So I tweeted out, like, just played Gears 5, picked up right where I left off on an Android using a PlayStation 4 controller connected wirelessly. Like, the video games are weird. And then someone replied, like, tweeted from iOS. And I was like, yes, you got me. Yes, my main phone is an iPhone. I have an Android at work. No big deal. So at first, it was a little stuttery right when I first loaded in. Then I quickly that stutter went away. And
before you get there, I'm sorry. Yeah. What was the setup process? What did you have to do to even make that happen? Leave your Xbox on at home? How did
Got
that work?
It. So I wrote a check to $1 million and sent it to Microsoft and it said, please get me in this beta. No. So it is a public beta that they're not backing all the way up. I emailed and I don't know how many invites went out, but it's rolling out. After that, no, the setup, you don't have to own these games. It's not going through my Xbox. I think that is an eventual part of xCloud, kind of the same way that you can do that on PlayStation right now. I forget what they call it, remote play or whatever that's kind of morphed into.
Yeah. Turn your system into a server,
correct.
Basically, right?
But in this instance, I think it's Halo 5, Gears 5, Sea of Thieves, or something else.
You don't have to say R after every time you say Sea of Thieves.
So in this, you download the app onto your Android device. Currently, it's only on Android, and it's like the Xbox game streaming beta app or whatever. I downloaded the app. I logged in with my Xbox Live credentials, and from there was given the selection of games to play. And I was like, well, Gears 5 is the game I think is the most beautiful of these. So I wanted to.
And because it had your save yes. in the cloud,
yes.
you were able to pick up where you left
yes.
off.
Yes. I mean, all but instantly, right? Like it took a time to sync that. But yeah, my Xbox was not on at home. It wasn't, I didn't leave it in sleep mode or, you know, whatever. Like this was playing from some data server somewhere and pulled my save from the cloud. And when I first loaded in, it was a little hitchy right off the bat, but then that quickly went away. I went into the open world areas of the game. I went through a couple of larger enemy encounters, and it's weird. I found, and I was playing on a PlayStation controller because for whatever reason, the Xbox One controller I had kept dropping its connection with the Pixel. And I don't know if that's the problem with these types of services sometimes. It's like, is that the phone? Is it the controller? Is it the cloud service? But the PlayStation 4 controller held its connection, which it's just weird. And I was just playing the game, and there were moments, even still playing on a Pixel, which is about, it's a, not the newest one, not the 3A, but the 3, not the 4. It's about the same screen size as the 11, not the big one, whatever those are called. or that 10S, whatever screen size. And there were moments, even there playing on that phone, that I fell into the game. Like I was just playing Gears the way, you know, I kind of forgot the setup and the futuristic version of this game that I'm playing. And I was just sitting there playing the game. There were other moments where I was trying to, you know, send my little robot off to do something, and I was squinting and leaning close to see where I could get the X prompt to come up to activate something to do something, or like pulling up the HUD or something like that was a little problematic. Like it wasn't the best way to play Gears 5. I wouldn't recommend this is how people should play the game.
It was the best way to play it while you're at work, in front of your Xbox.
A very exciting way to play it that I think speaks to the future of kind of this interconnected cloud computing version of a game. I should say I have very, very fast Wi-Fi at my office. And so there was no stuttering or problems there. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And I like that it's free. I feel like while Microsoft, and we didn't talk about this story, but Stadia's controller is only wireless via Chromecast at launch. You're going to need to connect it to your computer to play versus your computer. Like, while I'm very excited for Stadia to come out, Founder Edition, I think there's something to be said about the way Microsoft is doing this xCloud stuff and like being very upfront. It's a beta. They're not charging you anything. Kind of, it's only on Android right now, but hook up any controller you can to it. Only the selection of games. And I think they're kind of proving out this concept in a way to get things, I'm speculating here, really on board for the next gen Xbox. And it's very exciting. I really enjoyed playing Gears, which is a game I enjoy. And I think that says a lot about the service, that I was very much enjoying it, playing it on a phone away from my console. It's incredible. Yeah.
Future, baby, the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm so glad you, like you say, you could actually get into the game and not really be like distracted by anything around you. I think that's so cool. And I really, you know, what you're saying, I think Microsoft is doing so much better job than just not keeping a low profile, but not yelling everything out right, so they can pull it back later like Google is doing at the moment, right? So, wow, that sounds really nice.
Yeah. The other two will be quicker. Mortal Kombat 11, I've been playing as a Terminator. I have the expensive edition of Mortal Kombat, so I have all of those characters. I think he animates really well. I feel like the Terminator. I think I said this when Ninja Turtles came to Injustice. I get very greedy, and I wish that these DLC characters all had stories, like, you know, story modes behind them, because I think the flavor they add to the game is so cool. I want more of it. And then selfishly, the reason I went to play Terminator is because in a blink and you miss it cameo in the second fatality, you'll see my name show up, which is, you know, it's so fun. I love these games. And that's
Both of our names are in there. Well, ish. My name's a little strange, but for good reason.
It's a real treat. It's a real treat. And I really like the character. I think he's fun in game. And he's like slow, powerful. And then Fortnite got me. I went back for chapter 2. I updated it, played it on Switch, and the new map, this is not going to be the podcast where we break down the nuances of Fortnite chapter 2, but I liked the boat. I liked the water mechanics. I liked being able to swim. The new map felt exciting, but yet still familiar in ways. And the thing that I think I noticed right off the bat is the way they're easing people back in, it feels like, with bots. And while I subconsciously knew that there had to be bots in my match, I won't lie and say that it didn't feel good to do really well the first three games I played. Like, that's going back to our conversation about AI and data of like, I wanted to keep playing in a way that
let the Wookiee win.
Yes. And I wanted to keep playing in a way that I hadn't in a long time because I wouldn't do well, you know? And so it was that right amount of like, oh, this, hey, I'm doing all right. And it's bringing a single player experience of like gaming of like, you're the superhero to these multiplayer games. And I'm curious to see how that progresses, because I think that is the biggest thing to solve for these online games is matchmaking or making it rewarding across skill bands. And so far for me, I found Fortnite Chapter 2 rewarding.
While you're in the bots, it's all good.
It's the best. I'm dominating.
All right. That's what we've been playing. I've been playing things that I'm not allowed to talk about. So I'm going to use my time here to talk about what a listener has been playing. If you want to send in a review or a mini discussion about a game that you have been playing, please send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Sometimes we don't get to all of the games. There are gems that we haven't played or things that maybe we did play that you have a different take on. We'd love to hear it. You can send that to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This one comes
from Kef Janata, who disregarded NDAs and said, my thoughts on the following.
He's been playing a game called Seth Dranding. this comes from Tyson Laundry. Tyson says, hi guys, loved the episode with Victor Lucas. I've been out of gaming for several years after my cat used my old PS3 as a makeshift litter box. Was fortunate to pick up a PS4 Pro last Christmas, and I've been making up for lost time like crazy and started listening to DLC as my guide to what's new and happening in the gaming world. Hearing Victor Lucas was extra special as he was my guide to gaming back in the day. I just happened to pick up Trine 1, 2, and 3 recently on a recommendation and love the discussion on Trine 4. Which brings me to my own recommendation, Unravel 2. If you want a gorgeous platforming puzzler, this one is the best I've ever seen. It is fascinating, and the detail that is just out of focus in the background and what is in focus in the foreground is just beautiful. Beyond the visuals, the puzzles are just the right level of challenging and so satisfying to complete and progress. I was skeptical of the splitting joining mechanic of the yarn protagonist, but it really does work well. I did a quick Google search to see if you had discussed this game already, and I saw a mention of the first Unravel that the Spice Man was playing in 2016. Hold for Spice Man.
2016 Spice Man wasn't as spicy, I don't think.
Okay. If you haven't read this sequel, I can't recommend it enough. Thank you, Tyson. Christian, did you ever try Unravel 2?
Just for the briefest of time, then I believe, and please, Tyson, let me know if I'm wrong. I believe it was like an E3 drop, and it was like, yeah, I still had, right. I like played it and had it, and then something else came along, because something else came out the same E3, God, what was it? But the short answer is very little.
Yeah. Well, very cool. That's Unravel 2, recommended by Tyson, who sent it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, I have been playing some VR, as have we all, so let's do a little bit of VR talk. All right, we've been playing some of those games in the headsets. My eyes are back to being able to be in a headset again, so I'm very happy about that.
Ooh, both of them. You had like the small thing on the one eye, right? Is that totally gone now?
Not totally gone, but I have vision well enough that I can, you know, have binaural vision. I guess binaural is just audio, but whatever.
You can sense 3D.
Yes, I'm able to put the headset on and have any problems, which is wonderful. So I've been back in the headset. But Simon, let's start with you. Have you played any VR lately?
Yeah, I've actually dived back into Trove Saves the Universe. I played that game like when it released, but I didn't play it in VR. Actually, I don't know why. I think it was because it was just too big of a setup for the PlayStation VR. But I always wanted to go back and try it in VR. And man, that's a fun game. And it still is. And it's perhaps even more fun, actually, in VR. I actually think that, you know, I think you guys talked about it at some point that the current state of VR, what VR does really well is when you are like an omnipresent person looking down on what's happening, right? So. Yeah. And that's pretty much Trover Saves the Universe. You're in this chair and it's all watching Trover running around. And I think that works so well. And it really gets me into the world and it's still so much fun. And I actually think that it seems like they took so many different qualities from different VR games, like especially from what's it called now? The robot thingy, Astrobot Rescue Machine, right? They have it has some of the same way when Trover leaps across, spaces and stuff like that. It's really funny and it works really well in VR, perhaps even better than in the normal thing.
And so, it has a sense of humor, which is always fun to see in games too.
Yeah, it's extremely funny. And I've, sometimes I've just I've just stopped and listened to the Glorcons, I think the enemies are called, the Glorcon clones. And if you stand around long enough, sometimes you'll actually hear Justin Roiland just break out laughing, because apparently all the voices were actually not the ones that were meant to be in the game. Apparently he just went into a booth and just rappled for like 20 hours, and then they put that in, and then when they planned to go back and redo the whole thing, but at some point they were just like, nah, we'll just keep this in. And you can totally hear that, and it actually makes it more fun.
That's awesome. Well, that's Trover Saves the Universe, and you're playing it on which headset? The PSVR?
A PSVR, unfortunately. Yeah,
that's perfectly fine. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Asgard's Wrath, which is a game I have been highly anticipating. It is from Sansaru Games. This is the same studio that did the very, very underrated a VR sports challenge on Oculus. That is a game that I always have to remind myself to recommend to people. I know it's an Oculus exclusive, so it's not easy for many people to go back and play it. But man, it is so well done and so good. Anyway, Asgard's Wrath is a full-on 30-hour role-playing game experience. Big, deep, triple-A, story-based, single-player role-playing game with action combat. I mean, this is the real deal in VR. This is the kind of thing I've been waiting for since VR came on the scene. We had little tastes of this kind of thing, but this is the real deal, and it is awesome. I'm just scratching the surface of this big, deep experience, but already I'm like, I might have to make room on my top five of the year for this game. It is that good. It's one of the best VR experiences I've ever played. It's beautiful. It is deep and engrossing. The combat's thrilling and smartly executed. There's really great ideas. Like, you get these companions. So it's very much a God of War type setting. It's that same Norse mythology of the rebooted God of War. And you are this god. The game, one of the best things about VR in any game is a sense of scale. And this game makes use of it. I mean, the very first scene of this game is you are a titan, a giant god wading through the sea, fighting a kraken who's throwing ships at you and you're smacking them out of the air. I mean, it does scale really, really well. But it also does that thing you were talking about, Simon, where at certain points you can move from this first-person hero mode where you're fighting and adventuring to a god view where you're looking down on that same hero, that same adventurer that you've been, and you're able to take in the whole environment from a macro perspective. Another game that did that was Robinson the Journey, which did that really, really well. This game does it, and it's really cool. And as that god, you can also take creatures at certain points and turn them into followers that give you special abilities and can fight for you. So you have this like little companion that does cool different things, and you can make it fight, and you can send it around and work on puzzles for you. So clever, so cool. The combat is awesome. You're throwing weapons and pulling them back to your hand, just like, you know, Kratos does in the new God of War, just like Thor does in the Marvel movies. It makes you feel like that, except you're actually doing it because it's in VR. I love this game. I love this game. I mean, the first time you walk into a tavern in this game and it's got like a band playing with all these crazy creatures, a giant like minotaur talking, and this cool big creature working an anvil on the side, and characters sitting at the tables talking. It's a full AAA, like you walk in it like what I want out of a Skyrim or something like that. It is that in VR, but beautiful, made for VR. It's Asgard's Wrath, man. It's a must play.
Can I ask you something? Because that, to me, it seems is exactly what I want from a VR game, like these RPG stuff, because then you can actually live in the world in a whole different way than you can without the VR, right?
Yeah.
But do you get, okay, and now, of course, you still have the eye thing, so maybe you're not the right person to ask, but how long can you stay in that world? Because I often find that I can't stay that long in VR as I can without. But this seems like a world I would like to live in almost.
I guess I'm atypical because I don't really have that thing where I have to get out of it. I played Lone Echo for hours and hours in VR and long stretches. So I don't tend to have that. I got to get out of here, especially with the second round of headsets that are more comfortable. Oh, which is what the thing I really need to tell you about right now, Christian. This was an Oculus exclusive first party game. I loaded up my Rift, my first gen Rift, played this game for a little while in my Rift. And then I was like, man, wouldn't it be great if I could play this on my cool new, you know, Valve, what's it called? Can you remember?
Index.
My Index. Wouldn't it be cool if I could play this on my Valve Index? And then I was like, well, maybe Revive. I don't know if Revive doesn't work with Vader Immortal, so maybe it doesn't look. Oh, Revive does work with Asgard's Wrath. And I loaded it up through Revive on my Valve Index night and day. Especially because it was back to back. I had played a few hours in the Rift and I was like, oh, maybe this will work in the. So it was back to back. I literally like downloaded Revive, the new version of Revive, loaded it back up on Index and bopped right back into that same, you know, right where my save game was. Oh my God. First of all, this is one of the most beautiful VR games ever. Secondly, the going from the like God rays and screen dooring to the higher resolution, no God rays, pristine. I mean, it's still not perfect. Like we still have one more iteration of these headsets to go to get really there. But man, it is a huge difference. And I was so grateful that Revive works because people who have, you know, Vives, who have Indexes, I think even Windows VR is supported on Revive to some degree, not 100% sure on that, but man, it is awesome. And it makes it a game that more people can play and more people should be playing Asgard's Wrath because it's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah. As we've mentioned on the show, headsets being displays in terms of getting people into VR and what it can do. I understand the need for exclusives and how that can sell devices, but I always like it because you have the best display. I'd be like, you got to come over and play Last of Us 2, but you can only play it on my 720p TV.
And also because like usually like people have preferences. Like if you use the widescreen monitor, right, when you play a lot of games, and I mean that's an option you have, and I really think. Making the headsets, like as you say, like a device and not like a special thing that's tied to a special thing. It just makes it so much more easier to get into also for people who doesn't typically do VR, I think.
The other thing that's cool about the Index is the controllers. You know, I've mentioned before they have that grip that sort of senses your grip on the handles. And it's not a button for the grip. It's actually just like squeezing your hand. Really interesting implementation because Revive is basically mapping one-to-one the Oculus Touch controllers to the Revive controllers, which you can do with Revive much better than you can do with the actual just HTC Vive because those controllers are so weird and wonky. They don't actually have sticks and you can't push the sticks in. So it's not a perfect one-to-one from the Oculus Touch. Whereas Index is a one-to-one. But the cool thing is on Oculus Touch, you pull those sort of your middle finger button as the grip. They call them the grip button, but you usually use it with your middle finger. But it is a full trigger there at your middle finger. And you use that a lot in Asgard's Wrath to hold your shield, hold your sword, pick up items, grab things, pull levers, all kinds of stuff. But because the Index has that grip button, or grip sensor, really. It's not a button at all. It's a sensor. And it has the hand grip things that hold the controllers on your hand. It was the first time since I've gotten Index that I found myself just relaxing my hands for most of the game and letting the controller just hang there attached to me via those grip pads. And then when I actually wanted to pick something up, I literally just wrapped my fingers around the controller, not squeezing, just holding like you would, touching something. And in the game, I would grab the thing. I'd grab my sword. I'd grab my shield. I'd grab a lever, whatever it was. And then when I wanted to let go of it, I just opened my hand and the controller didn't fall off of it, but I wasn't actually holding anything.
That's cool.
Very cool. It was the first time that I went, oh, this is why they made it that way. This is why they did that. It's for this.
Yeah, so, that's cool.
Christian, how about you? What do you got going on in VR?
So for a friend's, I think it's going to come out on YouTube and I'll plug the link. They do like silly VR games oftentimes where they'll be like, they'll download and play and record people playing VR games that have no user reviews. Just like diving into that wild west of VR games that are available. What we ended up playing were like baby simulator games. And I played a game called Baby Hands that I think is on PSVR. I played it via Steam. Less about the game and more about, this is my first time using the wireless Vive. Coming from Oculus Quest, that wireless untethered experience was less mind blowing in terms of like, you know, I'm Pinocchio, no strings anymore. I'm a right. boy. But playing because we dabbled around in some other stuff too, that high fidelity or higher fidelity experience wirelessly, this was with the Audio Pro strap or whatever the Vive calls it and their wireless receiver. I was very impressed. I think it is maybe harder to recommend now with the state of VR and transitioning between generations or whatever this is going to be. And I noticed that HTC kind of hasn't made wireless standard in their pro headsets and stuff like that. But having never experienced it, I was very, very impressed with how well it worked, at least in that setup. And then to the game a little bit, I was expecting it just to be a whatever horrible little thing. I don't know if I can recommend it. I think it's $20, but I was surprised by just how detailed it was in terms of what you could do. It felt like it was maybe recreating the Rugrats house, like unofficially, wink, wink. And then there was like all these little mini puzzles that were, it's like I broke out of my baby pen and then like had to get a key that was in one of those, like drop in different shapes things into a box that would unlock it. Like I stuck my head, I broke, you know, VR rules. I stuck my head in to see what was in it. I was like, oh, there's a key in there. I had to find the pieces, like crawling like a baby to put them in, to get a key, to distract the cat, to do the thing. There's a bow and arrow mini game that like the physics were far better than they had any business being. Again, far better experiences to play in VR. And whenever this video comes out, I will link it via Twitter. But I was shocked. I was shocked at the depth of this game that had no business being as interesting as it was, but more so impressed by the wireless Vive.
Very cool, man. And that game again was called Baby Hands.
Baby Hands. Yeah, right. It is what it is.
Awesome. All right. Well, before we wrap up this episode, which has been a great one, we got an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com responding to one of our quick questions from last week. And I loved the tenor of this email, so I wanted to read it. Last week we talked about games that made us feel emotional, and we got this email from Ed WK, who wrote, "I liked hearing your response to the question about games that make you feel emotional. What Remains of Edith Finch was a game that got me as well. It's also a game that I bought based on Jeff's recommendation and ended up being one of my favorites of 2017. I wanted to give my answer to this question about emotions because I feel like a lot of responses to questions about emotional games involve games that make you feel sad or bittersweet. My answer to this question is a game that always makes me feel overwhelmingly joyful. The original Katamari Damacy on PS2 is a game that always makes me feel incredibly happy. The absurdity of the premise, the king's dialogue, and the silly animations of objects, animals, and people getting rolled into a ball always makes me laugh. I still love listening to the music from the game even over a decade later. I also have fond memories. Yeah, great soundtrack. I also have fond memories of playing the game in college. I was a college freshman in 2005, and the game became one of the most popular on our dorm. I think only one person on our floor actually owned the game, but it got passed so much because everyone wanted to play it. Anytime anyone played Katamari on their room with their door open, it always drew a crowd because the visuals and music in the game were unlike anything else that existed at the time. I got the remastered version when it came out on Switch and recently played it with my daughter. Seeing her laugh as the prince rolled things up into a ball was a pretty incredible feeling. Thanks to all you guys do and keep up the good work. I love that email. I just thought that was great. He's right. Yeah. He's right. You know, when everybody says what games make you feel emotional, we always go to those sad emotions, which is fine and wonderful for games to do, but it's great to think about positive, joyful emotions as well.
Yeah, I wasn't really listening, but I am shocked that Katamari made Ed cry like that.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Simon, thank you so much for being here, sir. It's been a pleasure.
No, the honor is mine. I'm really glad that we made this work, even though we are 9 hours apart. It was very nice to be here. Thank you so much, guys.
Oh, it's absolutely our pleasure. It's wonderful getting your perspective on things and hearing from you as well. So where can people follow you and your work online?
Well, if you can read and understand Danish, of course, you can check out all I write on politiken.dk. That's politiken.dk. And otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Simon Roligard. I think you can find my name in the description, right? Two G's and two A's. Yeah, exactly. and I'm Twitter. And that's about it, I think, at the moment.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
It rolls right into my parting gift. Nothing big or special to announce this week. Unfortunately, my week is consumed of a passive form of entertainment.
All right. Well, you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And Christian and I are doing some other gaming related stuff, right, Christian? We got this control pad thing going on. You can find that by searching for CTRLPAD on YouTube or as an audio podcast. We're doing it with some folks that are really, I think, might be familiar to some of you. And it's a lot of fun. It's a very interesting, cool new way for us to talk about video games. Check it out. CTRLPAD, right, Christian?
Yes. Control C, Control F, Control PAD. Is that?
Yeah. Control pad. Also the Slash Filmcast. I do that with the cool folks at Slash Film. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. And
you get to the thing that is the best thing you've ever done, can I just say Slash Film has been throwing some fire recently. You guys, I get, maybe it's this time of year, but there's been some good episodes.
Yeah, there really has. I have to weigh in on that as well. I agree with Christian. It's a very good show, and especially lately, yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I just had dinner tonight with Dave Chen, who was in town, in my town, and Peter Serretta. And it was lovely seeing him in person. And it's a joy to do that show, and I appreciate you guys listening and saying kind things. We're having lots of fun, and yeah, it's a good time of year for games. It's also a good time of year for movies. We're getting to, you know, Oscar season and lots of fun stuff to talk about. So check that out, slashfilmcast.com. But also, yeah, I'm doing the Dungeon Run, which is my way of making something creative and narrative based. I'm telling a story. I'm telling a fantasy story in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons. I'm the Dungeon Master and got some awesome players. I hope you check it out. It's available as a podcast if you search for The Dungeon Run. It's also available on YouTube if you search for The Dungeon Run. Or you can watch it live as we record it Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific by visiting caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. All right, guys, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Simon, can you give some people something to do while they get through their week?
Yeah, I can definitely. It's also a podcast. It's called Myths and Legends. And what I love about this is it's a historian, a guy who tells stories from folklore all around the world. And without some of all the sugar on top, you know, people are probably used to, you know, to get folklore from Disney or other modern fairy tale interpreters, right? But oftentimes they're really violent when you go back to like their origin, and personally, I've gotten to love the stories he tells from Slavic and Asian folklore, just because the way those stories are structured are so different from the way we traditionally construct narratives in Western culture. So they are so awesome. I usually listen to them if I have a hard time falling asleep. It's like an adult fairy tale before bedtime. And there's a lot of episodes. If you don't know where to drop in, I'll recommend episode 5, where an evil Russian magician, just much like Voldemort from Harry Potter, divides his soul so he can't be killed. And that was apparently a big thing back in the day in Russia. It's very fun, and he's very good at telling these stories.
Yeah, that's called Myths and Legends, and it is a podcast.
We get it, Simon. Cool. Disney's The Little Mermaid isn't the real Danish version. Jeez.
Exactly, Christian. No, they made her live, and I'm mad about that. She should be killed. She should be. I think it's called. She's being dust on the waves in the
I
end.
I still think about that when I see Seafoam. That is how it really ends. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Christian Spicer, what about you? Parting gift?
It's the World Series. I talk baseball, throughout the year kind of regularly, but this is another year where one of my beloved teams has made it back. I've been a spoiled boy, where in 2017, both of my teams made it. 2018, my current host city team made it, and this year the Astros are back again. And I was thinking about, I think, Jeff, maybe what you said off, maybe it was on the show or offline, about how, like, you know, baseball is a little too slow for you. And I understand that criticism. I think as I was watching the ALCS, part of what I love about baseball over something like football or basketball is I was trying to put it in a gaming perspective. And like baseball is maybe more PUBG, and basketball or something like that is a little more Fortnite, where there's something always going on. But baseball, there is tension in all of the moments in between, because there is, you know, downtime. Where is the shift on? Where is this batter? Is they're bringing in a lefty or the righty, or can they get this person to do that? And like, there are moments in between where, of course, if you are a fan of a team, it makes it, you know, more stressful or emotional. But a friend that I didn't know watched or cared about sports texted me during game 6 of the ALCS, just like, rooting for the Astros with you. And I was like, stop it. you don't watch sport. I'm too stressed out. I can't respond. And it's like those, nothing was happening on screen. Like if you walked by, it's just, you know, people standing, literally people standing. And it was the most nerve wracking thing for me, you know, in sports all year. And I'm so excited that the Astros have made it back to the World Series. It is game 1 on Tuesday night, and is going to be a battle of aces here with incredible pitchers, both on the Nationals and on the Astros. And I hope that it is an exciting season. So if you're waiting, you know, to check out some baseball, I hope it's a great World Series for everybody. And go Astros.
Very cool, man. I'm happy for you. Congrats on that. That's great. I always try to – I like the World Series. I like playoff baseball-ish when teams that I kind of care about are there. But I just am not a baseball guy. My beloved 49ers, however, are still undefeated. Yeah. And I'm very happy about that 6-0.
You're invited over, Jeff, for any World Series game, or maybe not. Yeah. As when Amanda came in, my wife, when I was watching game 6, she just looks at me and goes, and this is when we were winning, like before they gave up the lead and had to get it back. She looks at me and she goes like, are you okay? And I'm like, this is how I watch my team win. Leave me alone.
This is my joy. This is how I express it. Yeah. We have a listener-suggested parting gift. This comes to us from Kurt Prenger, who Kurt says, my parting gift is to take your kids to a pumpkin patch. It's a great way to spend some time outdoors, and it is typically free to visit. Many farms usually have other fun activities to enjoy along with the pumpkin picking. For example, the farm we took our kids to had a giant inflatable pumpkin bounce house and a free petting zoo. They had a blast. And for those without kids, go to a pumpkin patch anyway. Buy a pumpkin, carve it into a jack-o'-lantern, and participate in a traditional Halloween activity. You can roast the pumpkin seeds and enjoy a nutritious snack while you're at it. Love the show and keep up the great work. Thanks, Kurt. That's fun. Yeah, pumpkins. We're doing the pumpkin thing. We go to the patch. We have a favorite patch. Yeah. Around our place as well.
You guys go to a specific place to do that? It's so funny. I just buy one and make it at home, but I think that I don't know. Is that a thing in the States that you go to a specific place where everyone goes?
Yeah, the selection of the pumpkin is a big deal.
That's so nice.
Walk around until one of the pumpkins speaks to you in a very powerful way. And then you look at how much it costs and you go, nope, not that one, something smaller.
Yeah, we do both. We do the grocery store pumpkin, and then there's also a farm, farm, quote, air quote farm, that does a big like fall fest thing that the kids love.
That sounds again, nice.
It's wonderful. I love fall festivals. We don't really have fall, but we have fall festivals, which is nice. Again, if you want to have your parting gift on the show, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We appreciate that. The parting gift that I will bring up is one of the shows that I have enjoyed on Amazon Prime Streaming is back with a third season. It's called Goliath. It stars Billy Bob Thornton and a bunch of really wonderful character actors surrounding him. It's about a lawyer who takes down big, big, like class action cases against Goliaths, these huge companies. And the third season is all about California water rights, which is a really interesting topic. It is bonkers, man. It's like drug trippy and weird and off the rails in kind of wonderful ways. Third season, I mean, the show is it just takes really wonderful risks, and I dig it. So check it out. I think the first and second season are well worth your time if you haven't watched them. That's Goliath. It's on Amazon Prime Streaming. All right. That is going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Simon Rolligard and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all of the folks in our chat room for hanging out with us in real time. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those cool bumpers. Thank you to each and every one of you who hang out with us every week. Boy, we're grateful for that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.